This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
John Loeffler here. Welcome back to the August recess version of Financial Sense News Hour. You know, we have talked about quantitative easing quite a bit. We've watched ourselves go through all of the stimulus programs after the 2007-2008 crash. And now it seems central banks, you hear the rumblings again of making helicopter drops, which really means just outright inflation. Are you in favor of them? And could we get away without them? Because I remember, I don't know if it was Gary Shilling or someone else said, you know, we're sort of committed to the course we're on here.
You know, at this point, would I be in favor of helicopter drops if it was used productively? And I'll tell you the reason I feel that. Number one, we are witnessing the lowest interest rates we've seen in human recorded history. So if the money was used rather than, let's say, transfer payments, if it was used to really rebuild our roads, our bridges, our airports, our waterway systems in this country. One of the problems that we saw with Katrina and Rita in 2005 was the levees broke. And you're seeing a lot of those dangers and risks right now as we're seeing in those floods in Louisiana. So I would be in favor of that because anything that you can do that would enhance the productive capabilities of the economy and then could be financed with long-term debt at the most historic lowest interest rates we've seen in recorded human history, John, I would be in favor of that. The only thing that I'm worried about is that it wouldn't be handled. As we all recall now, with the President Obama's stimulus bill that came out in 2009, they were supposed to have these shovel-ready projects. The problem is, with environmental controls and everything, they never got anything off the ground. There wasn't any shovel-ready projects. So, you know, it's a question of whether it could actually be done. In other words, could you kind of fast track the system to get these things going? And the problem with government is the corruption that's involved in government. So instead of the best companies actually getting the job or the bid to do the job, it's actually crony capitalism. It's usually the companies that contributed to congressional campaigns to get awarded the project. We've seen this over and over with military spending where we end up overspending. So am I in favor, if it was used to productive use for infrastructure in this country, could be financed with long-term debt, not short-term, but let's say 30-year debt, where, you know, the government can finance right now at 2.25% on a 30-year bond. If we could finance at 2.25%, which is what we did in the 50s and 60s coming out of World War II, when Eisenhower administration built our national highway system, which was built as a defensive mechanism. The other thing that I would be in favor of is basically upgrading our military. I mean, John, I don't care if it's our nuclear triad, if it's the weapon systems. I know that I live in a town that is home base to four carrier battle groups. Basically, 40% of our carrier battle groups is based out of Southern California. We've got the largest Navy SEAL base here. We have a Marine air base here. We have Camp Pendleton. We have a submarine base here. And a lot of this equipment is going into disrepair. I know when the aircraft carriers come in, I have friends in the military, they're cannibalizing parts from different planes because they don't have the parts, we don't have the equipment, and we're allowing everything to go in disrepair at a time that the world has become a more dangerous place. So I do believe that you're going to see helicopter drops no matter who's president. It's just a matter of who would do it more effectively. And, you know, the way government spends money, I hope that there would be some oversight and we'd actually do something that would be beneficial to the country rather than crony capitalism and rewarding some company to build a bridge to nowhere that we don't need just because of a political contribution. That's the only reservation I have.
What about, I think everyone is saying it ends badly. And so the real question is there anything we can do to get away from it? You know, we say, well, we shouldn't be inflating, et cetera. But are we really committed to this course now?
We are committed to it. You are going to see deficit spending coming with the next president, whether it's Trump or Clinton. The problem is, John, the real gorilla in the room that nobody's talking about is entitlements. And I hate to say it, but the disability trust fund would have been bankrupt this year because what happened is under Obama, he loosened the standards. And so the disability expenditures have just gone through the roof. And the disability trust fund would have been broke this year, dead broke. There would have been no money left. So what they did is they did this backroom deal last November in the budget deal, and they're taking money out of the Social Security, funneling over into the disability trust fund to keep it afloat until after the elections. And it just floors me that the media has not picked up on either candidates not wanting to focus on entitlements, because that's the 800 gorilla in the room. I'm sorry, folks, but we don't have the money. And as we're seeing right now, the real cost of Obamacare comes into play in 2017, where you're going to see massive increases in medical premiums. We already know, for example, for 30% of Medicare recipients, January of next year, you're going to see your premiums go up 23%, and you're going to see your deductibles go up 23%. We simply don't have the money. And we just had another major health insurer pull out of the exchange system, Aetna. And so the system is going to collapse of its own weight. And so if we don't do reforms, whether it's on medical care, Social Security, they need to postpone the retirement age. We simply cannot allow people to retire at an earlier age. We just don't have the money. And people are living longer. Longevity has been going and increasing by 2 years every single decade. And so Social Security was never designed for people to live into their 90s, or in some cases, their 100. And that's what's happening right now. I mean, if you're a parent and you have a child born today, there's a 50% chance that that child will live to be the age of 104. So unless they handle entitlements, John, we're going to be in serious trouble, because the Congressional Budget Office, and we've mentioned this number of times on the program, by the year 2025, Social Security and Medicare will take up 100% of government tax revenues. There will be no money for defense, no money for interest on the debt, which could be $40 trillion by that time, and there will be no money to run government itself. So sooner or later, either government will be forced to handle it in a crisis, or we do it in an intelligent way and head it off and plan for it and restructure, because entitlements is the bulk of government spending today, and it's on an unsustainable path. I don't care what politicians promise you in election year, they're simply lying to you. They're not telling you the truth, because internally they know different.
Okay, you know, Jim, on the program, we spend an awful lot of time talking about what the Fed will or will not do. As I said before, I think at some time we ought to open a pool and just take bets to see which way they're going to go. But that probably wouldn't be ethical. So anyway, the real question has been, and was last year, were they going to raise rates or not? They did, right at the end of the year, a quarter of a point. And now the question is, are they going to end up raising rates this year? Where are the hints falling?
You know, John, I just don't see it. I mean, the probabilities are nobody sees a rate hike coming in September. I don't think they would dare raise rates before a presidential campaign, especially with Yellen being a staunch Democrat. And the second thing is they don't even know what the impact would be on the markets. I think they were rather surprised on a little quarter point interest rate hike in December, what they saw unfold the next 6 weeks. We saw a crisis globally in the financial markets. The stock market tanked, bond markets tanked, credit spreads widened, commodities fell to record lows. That was just a quarter of a point. Can you imagine doing that before election? I don't see it. And I don't see it coming in November. And John, if I'm following the economic numbers that we're following right now, where we see these things in unemployment trending lower, inventories being liquidated, business investment being trending lower, corporate profits trending lower, all these things are trending in the wrong direction. This would not be the ideal environment that you would want to raise interest rates, but eventually you're going to have to do it. But I think that will come in time as we pivot from a disinflationary environment to an inflationary environment. And then the Fed would be forced to do it. But at that time, assuming that they go to, let's say, Congress and the president go to a helicopter drop where they're spending a lot of money to stimulate the economy, that would give the Fed the room to raise interest rates. But until we do that, I just don't see this economy, which has been weakening now since the second quarter of last year, and corporate profits since the second quarter of 2014. And remember, when corporate profits trend down, what do companies do? Eventually, they pull back on hiring. They pull back on investing to conserve cash. I mean, take a look at what the energy industry is doing in order to conserve cash. They've canceled all their investment projects. That's having an impact on the economy. So this isn't the kind of economy nor do we have, I mean, the economy right now is being strangled by taxes and regulation. When I got in the business 35 years ago, it was taxes and inflation. Now, it's taxes and regulation. And the more we regulate, the more we tax, the worse off the economy is going to be. So unless we get to helicopter drops, I don't see a cause or a reason for the Fed to raise interest rates. I think they would be blown away when you look at these trends. And more recently, they've got to be alarmed at what's going on with retailing, especially since retail sales have been weak, because 70% of this economy is being driven by the consumer. And now we're starting to see a weakness in that sector. So we don't know if this is temporary. We'll have to watch it. But right now, you know, restaurant trends have been on a downtrend for 3 out of the last 6 months. And so I just don't see it happening, John. I really don't.
You know, housing's a big issue, Jim. And we did get an email from Katie, and she's writing from the Denver area in Colorado. She says, during your conversation with Tom McClellan, it was mentioned that a group may be missing out on buying houses while the rates are so low. However, here in my area, once again, the Denver metro area, houses have become quite expensive. So while mortgage rates are low, as opposed to the bonds, which folks will be losing money, it is very difficult for the millennials and the Gen Xers before them who haven't purchased homes yet to even afford to rent a place by themselves. Most of these groups of college grads who don't have homes must group together to either rent homes or even just apartments. And I recall Jim's comments about families now needing 2 incomes to make ends meet, which is a change from the earlier times when one dad, and you and I remember this, Jim, one dad worked out of the home and mom stayed home to manage the house and raise the children. What might that bode for what is coming, especially for the millennials, Jim?
Well, it's a tough market. And Katie, you raise a point. Part of the problem in this housing upturn has been the lack of supply. And there have been a number of reasons for that. Number one, it's taking longer to get permitting. In California, the average permitting process is 11 months. I know, you know, I recently built a home and it took us almost a year, I would say, to get through all the permitting. And so you take a large builder. Today, builders are watching what's happening with the economy. They see the weakening economic numbers that we do. And so as a builder, if you're going to put together a big project, let's say you're going to build 200 homes, you're going to have to put in infrastructure here in California. The state makes you build a new school, put in the sewers, all the things that you have to do. Those are upfront expenditures. So take a year to get the permitting, take 6 months or more to get the infrastructure put in before you actually get to building, and then you figure at least 9 months to build, you're talking about 2.5 years. And so builders have been reluctant to bring new supply. Part of the issue of rising prices in this housing recovery has been a supply issue, because builders don't want to get caught up like they did in the last downturn, where they were building a lot of spec homes and they were caught with unsold inventory. So part of the issue with housing prices is you need more supply. In order to do that, you've got to cut the permitting time, you've got to cut the fees, all the things that make housing expensive, because a lot of the cost of housing today is government. I know here in California, we got rid of Prop 13, but they just came in and substituted fees. I mean, when we built our house, John, the fees on building the house were over $100,000 to the government. So part of the problem, Katie, is supply. And until you bring on more supply, housing is going to be unaffordable for many Americans, including Gen Xers and millennials.
Dennis is living in Michigan. He says, you have an op-ed article from Daniel Ammerman about Italian banks. He references a number of articles he has written in the past on related subjects. One of them was about the supposed advantages of collecting Social Security later rather than earlier. And we've talked about this, Jim, on lifetime income a lot. It was his conclusion that late collection, in fact, may be a great illusion based on his suppositions. I would like for Jim to comment on this topic based on Ammerman's work. That is, does Jim consider this analysis valid or full of flaws?
There's 2 issues, and one of the reasons for delaying Social Security, and you just can't make general suppositions about how all this works. One of the reasons you would want to delay Social Security for boomers, full retirement age is age 66, meaning you could continue to work take your Social Security and not get penalized for phasing it out. And if you did that, you could allow your Social Security benefits to grow at 8% a year. But the real issue that we're going to face in the next 4 or 5 years, will the government honor that, and will they go to some form of means testing? Because not only Republicans are raising means testing, but Democrats are raising means testing as well. And that may be one of the solutions that they come up with. In which case, if you are one of the fortunate few that you make over a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, you may find out that the government ends up phasing out your Social Security benefits, saying, you know what, you're making a couple hundred grand a year, you really don't need your $2,000 a month check from Social Security. I can tell you, means testing is coming to entitlements, because we are going to have to reform entitlements. If we do not, they will explode. It is unsustainable in terms of the path we're on right now with Obamacare, with Medicare, and Social Security. There are a number of things that are happening. People are living longer. It was not anticipated when they put Social Security that the average lifespan would increase by almost, John, 2 decades in the course of a century. But that's what's been happening. So people are drawing on their Social Security benefits over a longer period of time. And so I would say whether you get your Social Security benefits, it really is dependent on your income. That's the way I look at it. I look at what's going to happen politically, because right now, the way it works is if you suspend your Social Security at age 66, your benefits will grow at 8% a year. I can't think of very many investments that grow at 8% a year guaranteed, which is what is happening with Social Security. It'll grow by 8% a year till age 70, at which time it stops growing by 8%, and then it just simply grows by the cost of living. So in my mind, it's going to be more dependent on income that you earn than anything else in terms of whether you want to defer your benefits. There are a lot of financial planning benefits of deferring that income based on your income for a future spouse, especially your wife, because most women have less Social Security benefits because the average woman spends 13 years out of the working force having children. And those years she spends out of the working force are zeros in averaging her Social Security benefit, which is your income over a 35-year period. So women tend to have less in Social Security, so their main benefit usually comes from their husband. So let's say they get half of their husband's Social Security benefit. And more importantly, when you defer it to age 70, that's a larger benefit at age 70. And ultimately, 85% of surviving beneficiaries on Social Security are women. So it would definitely benefit a wife. So in answer to your question, a lot of this really depends on your personal circumstances, both your income and what your financial retirement resources are.
Ferris has asked, was wondering what your thoughts are on preferred shares. I know Jim mentions high quality corporate bonds on the podcast a few times, but what about high quality preferred shares? Just wondering what your thoughts are on this. The yields are fair and with lesser volatility than normal shares. I bet you'd say we'd lose out on the capital appreciation with preferred, and would love to see a comment on a podcast on this subject. From his point of view, if we're going to be in the age of deleveraging for quite a few more years with low interest rates, why not put a portion of your investments in preferred?
I do like preferred stocks, and you also can get capital appreciation from a preferred just like you can in a stock or a bond. I mean, if you get a preferred stock and interest rates go down as they've done this year, it makes the value of those preferred shares go up in value just like you would bid up the price of a bond. So I do like preferred shares. You know, I should talk about them more frequently. I just haven't found recently, with the way interest rates have gone, preferred shares that I would like without paying a large premium. Because eventually, if they're called, let's say the par value of that preferred is $25 a share, but because of the interest rate that it pays, that preferred now is, let's say, $28 or $30 a share, you're paying $30 a share, and let's say it gets called because it's a higher interest rate paying preferred, then what happens? It gets called at $25. You lost the $5 premium that you paid for those preferred shares. So it's one of the reasons I have not been keen on a lot of the preferred shares that we've seen, is many of these stocks or preferred shares are selling for substantial premiums.
A number of astute experts have warned that the Department of Labor was actually regulating 401ks. I'm not sure what he means by this, Jim, but is this another example of financial repression that we should see in the future?
There is a growing concern among us in the field of the government getting into the investment business. In other words, regulating advisors, directing them in terms or passing legislation that would almost force advisors to do things we would normally not do. There is a risk here that that is happening. In other words, let's say we have another financial crisis or a stock market crash, and they call it the Retirement Security Act, and they say, you know, 20% of your retirement plan must be in zero coupon treasury bonds for security reasons. I could see that coming down the road, John, because they're starting to look at the pension market as one vast area of potential taxation, one vast area of tapping into future tax revenues or manipulating. I don't know if you remember this. Remember in the 90s during the Clinton administration, they were trying to bring up this idea of forcing pension funds or 401k plans, more pension funds back then. 401k was not as ubiquitous with companies as it is today, but forcing them to make what, quote, infrastructure or community investments. And of course, what would be considered community investments? You would have the government involved in directing how capital is allocated, which is the worst thing you could probably see. But somewhere down the road, we're going to have to be on the guard for that, because they seem to be inching in that direction with this heavily regulated state that we've seen come into play here in the last 7 or 8 years under the Obama administration, and it might be continued with the Clinton administration, where you tap into pension plans and government tries to figure a way to get at the trillions of dollars that have been set aside by the private sector for retirement as a future form of, let's say, infrastructure. Because you have some indication, you know, Donald Trump wants to fund it with private equity, and Clinton has hinted at, well, maybe this is something that we do within government itself, or within finding a way to finance it other than taxation, which would be, let's say, forcing pension funds to make our own, what they call, you remember this, John, this happened during World War II. Remember the Series E bonds?
They call them war bonds.
War bonds.
Right.
Yeah. So you could see something like that come from government.
Well, that concludes our summer recess, 2 weeks worth of programs, which has been a custom here on this show since we started the show, I guess, and we've been doing that. Next week, we come back, Jim, and we'll start our regular shows for the fall season until we take time off during the holidays, right at the end of the year. Anything we're pointing out over the horizon that's of interest?
We will have economic numbers coming in September. We have a Fed meeting, but I don't think anybody really expects that the Fed is going to be doing anything. But September marks the end of the third quarter. And usually, as a lot of our technicians talk about, September seems to be one of those months of the year where you get downturns in the market, corrections, more corrections than anything else. And then also, I think, John, watch what the stock market does, because the stock market has been one of the best predictors of who's going to be president, almost an 86% accuracy rate. I think after we come back, after Labor Day, I think we will start paying a lot more attention to the political polls. But John, you know, even then, there's some question in terms of the accuracy. I mean, look at the Brexit polls. Polls were saying that Britain would not leave, and we saw just the opposite. So I don't even know how accurate some of these political polls are going to be, but the market will be following these polls very closely. So in the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we hope you had a great, great summer. Be safe over the Labor Day weekend, and we will be back afterwards with our regular programming format. Until then, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries. or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.